Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are not positively on Radio Row. We're not in Tampa right now. I'd love to tell you there's palm trees. And given the hour that it is, Luke, you and I'd be like wrapping stuff up right now, putting headsets away, right? There'd be open bar in the old days, out on the balcony, al fresco. There'd be somebody with cigars. There'd be some open bar, and you know, we'd have some local ales and stouts and whatnot. And as I've said, Luke, you and I, there's a bar really close. I know the area well. So about two blocks away, there's Hat Tricks, a great hockey bar, great chicken tenders, beer, the whole deal. And I figure that's where, you know, we would wind up hanging out, because that's just where we would hang out. And we haven't done a damn thing like that this week, brother. How are you, man?
Good, good. I saw a photo of Radio Row earlier today, which, as you know, when it's at its busiest on Wednesday or Thursday, when it's early afternoon and the big time guests are starting to roll around, it's hard to even walk. I mean, you have times where it's difficult to just move around the room, and it was 20 tables spread out, and it was just one of the, it reminded me of getting there on Sunday before the Super Bowl, a week before, when it's just getting set up. It was bizarre.
Well, this guy's a great friend of ours, has been for a couple of decades. Jim Schwartz pulled me aside in Indianapolis one day, two decades ago, and said, you got to meet this Aaron Schatz guy. You know, Football Outsiders, they're doing some amazing things. And Luke, I know he's one of your favorites as well. He's one of our favorites. Aaron, what's going on, man? Give me pandemic life in football analytics tree. At least there was football to analyze, you know. So people have asked me, it's my 27th Super Bowl. That's the first one I've missed. People are like, man, you're bumming. And I'm like, my God, it's been a blessing to do 27. And here's the real blessing for anybody in the industry, anything. There's a game, and there was a very, very credible, and as I said to Luke, all summer long with baseball, basketball, hockey, a non-Eddie Fainer kind of feel. The football season felt real. This is a real championship. It was a real season.
Yeah, I mean, I've got mixed feelings. On one hand, absolutely. I'm very lucky that what I do for a living just went forward during COVID. You know, in the off-season, we wrote our off-season book like we always do. Then there was a season to cover, and we covered it like we always do. And I'm very lucky about that. On the other hand, I do miss having a social life. I miss seeing people. I miss seeing everybody at the Super Bowl and everyone in Indianapolis. You know, I'm not going to Indianapolis for the combine. I'm at home right now. I decided not to go down to Tampa because I figured there wasn't going to be much Radio Row to do media on. And it wasn't like you could hang out with all your buddies because everybody was going to have to be masked and careful. And
dude, did Tanier ever open that room on Tuesday night for media? Tanier threatened on Twitter to open a room and invite everybody.
He was going to have an online media party. I don't think it ever happened, but
I really wish it had, because I like all you guys. You know, I like. I mean, we really do have a fraternity that over, you know, half of my life, I'm 52, I've been going for 27 years, telling old war stories of going to Minneapolis and, you know, 1992 with, you know, Thurman Thomas and whatnot. But since then, it is a little weird. The whole thing's been weird. But I'll tell you this, from a football perspective, for what you do, and this is a great game, right? It's great quarterbacks. And as we're sitting here and we do know each other, we don't need to be in Tampa right now to sit here and talk about the game and the season and Lamar to feel fulfilled from a football perspective. And, you know, for people that experience the game on TV, and I have not been one of those guys, it's been a weird, plaguey year to sit home, watch games on TV. Luke's gone to more games than I have. I went to a handful. But did you make it out? I mean, you're in the New England area, right? You probably didn't leave, right? I mean,
no.
Your job is more home,
I
right?
I decided, usually I go to Gillette Stadium and I go to the Patriots games, and I decided to stay home this year. I just didn't want to have to sit there with a mask on for 7 hours. You know, especially in, you know, you go and the Patriots play at the 1 o'clock slot, and then the 4 o'clock slot, instead of writing, I'm watching whatever other national games are happening. And I didn't want to just have to hang out with a mask for that long and like avoid everybody. And so this year I did not go to any games. And again, I didn't go to the Super Bowl like I usually do. So I've been at home.
Luke,
Aaron, I have to
go ahead, man.
I have to give you credit because, and not that it's something you didn't already deserve. Anyone I talk to that's a serious football fan, I pass along footballoutsiders.com. I think it's great information. I think it's very well thought out, and clearly something that you and your colleagues have worked so hard on over these last several years, going way back to the early part of the millennium. But John Harbaugh dropped a DVOA reference at his season-ending press conference. I wanted to let you know that, but that aside...
Is that the high... I mean, sir, hold on. That's not a side. When that happens, is there a part of the 2001 version of you that... I mean, seriously. Not that want you to take a bow, because I don't... You know, but, like, that's pretty cool, bro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's awesome. He's not the first coach to mention us at a press conference, but every time it happens, I'm like... I can't believe that a coach just mentioned my thing in a press conference. Like, in some ways, even though I've been doing this now for a living for 17 years, I still think of it as my goofy little hobby from 2002. And it's like, oh my God, coaches are talking about my goofy little stat. Like, it's a kick.
Well, I think it's funny because I'll bring up DVOA to someone who's not aware. Nestor and I have talked about this over the air a number of times, and I've referenced the Ravens DVOA metrics. But, you know, in the most simplistic way, and you can correct me if I'm totally wrong here, but I try to explain, think of it just in terms of efficiency. If we can come up with the simplest term for DVOA, it's efficiency. It's finding a way to measure. And I know you have a formula and you've tweaked it. You continue to tweak it. That's an ongoing thing that you do. But I tell someone, we need to get away from talking about the Ravens having the 32nd ranked passing game because we're talking about volume of passing yards per game. They did not have the worst passing game in the league this year. However, if you look at it in terms of efficiency, so you can look at yards per attempt, you can look at passing DVOA, it wasn't great. It was middle of the pack and was a little worse than that until late in the season. But I guess that's the best way I would describe it. You know, for our listeners who aren't as familiar with something like DVOA, you know, how would you kind of, you know, present that as in terms of value to a common fan who maybe isn't into analytics as much?
Yeah, the basic idea is to think in terms of situational football the way coaches think. It was always about that it wasn't just total yardage, that the goal was to measure how well you did compared to the down and distance that you were on. So it measures success based on the amount of yards you need for a new first down, and then it compares that to a league average baseline that's adjusted for situation and opponent. And that's the easy explanation.
Well, this game.
And there'll be a quiz at the end.
Yeah, they said there'd be no math, but there is. Aaron, this game, I think one thing that you've talked about, and obviously here in Baltimore, there's been so much interest in Kansas City for obvious reasons, a team that Lamar Jackson and the Ravens have been chasing these last couple years. But one thing that I know you've talked about, even going back to maybe two-thirds of the way through the season and into the postseason now, is with Kansas City, the flip the switch theory. I know you've written about that. I want to give you some oxygen to explain that. I know you've compared it to the NBA. I think it's fascinating because you look at a team that was 14-2. You know, one of those losses came in week 17 when it didn't matter for them. But you compared it to the NBA and how they would jump out to these big leads and just kind of cruise. And you look up at the final score and it's a one-score game, but that didn't really necessarily tell the story of each week.
Eight straight games, I believe. There were eight straight games where the Chiefs won but didn't cover the spread. And so, yes, they were 14-1 in the games that mattered. But, yeah, if you look at the underlying play-by-play and the stuff that goes into advanced stats, and we were not the only advanced metric out there like this, sure. Kansas City was not the best team in the league. And the reason why is because they kept playing all these really close games. But there's this theory that what they would do is get out to a big lead and then take their foot off the gas, and also even on defense kind of take their foot off the gas and let opponents score late and get back into games. Now, that doesn't explain all of their close wins. Like, it doesn't explain the Atlanta game where they won by only 3 points and they got lucky when Younghoe Koo shanked a field goal at the end of the game that would have sent it to overtime. But a lot of the games this year qualify for this. And it just so happens that if you look at the splits, Kansas City, in fact, did exactly what people are saying that they did. When they had a 2-score lead in the fourth quarter, they suddenly became a bad team. Like, they were bad on offense and bad on defense when they had a 2-score lead in the fourth quarter, it's almost like they didn't really care that much. And they let teams come back and make things close, but then they never lost, right? They never let teams come back so much that they actually beat them, which a couple years ago, it did bite them once. A couple years ago, they did the same thing, but they had a game where the Chargers came back and then went for two and won the game.
Right.
This year, they won all those games anyway. So there's never been an NFL team that has done that really successfully and then suddenly turned it on in the playoffs and been this dominant, amazing playoff team. But we've seen that in the NBA. And the Chiefs seem to be doing it in the first half of the game against Cleveland before Mahomes got hurt. And then in last week's AFC Championship game, they were phenomenal on both sides of the ball. So it really does look like they're a different team, like they've flipped the switch.
And I think on the flip side, what's interesting is you have Tampa Bay, who finished with a higher DVOA, despite the fact they were 11-5 as opposed to 14-2. But I look at Tampa Bay's variance where, you know, I mean, we all recall some of the absolute dud performances that they had.
That amazing game against Green Bay and then that horrific game against New Orleans.
Just awful. But I think when you peel back the curtain and you look at some of these numbers, you know, the end result is you still have two very appropriate teams in the Super Bowl and what I think is going to be an excellent matchup. But you know how they got there, I think is so interesting.
The thing is that based on the numbers, people looked at the season and thought, oh my God, Kansas City is so much better than everyone else. They're unbeatable. They're inevitable. They're going to win it all. Like no one can come close to them. The numbers didn't say that. The numbers said we had a bunch of teams that were good and they were all really close to each other. And these are the two that we just ended up with at the end of things. In fact, one of those teams was Baltimore. If you look at just points scored and allowed, the team with the best projection this year was actually Baltimore. But the way that they've played in the playoffs for Kansas City does go along with this theory that they've kind of just been lying in wait, that they really are that much better than everyone else, and that when the playoffs came, they were going to show it, and that they have, I mean, Chad Henne aside, that they have basically shown it over the last couple of games.
It has to be strange as someone who looks at numbers, looks at efficiency, to see something like that looks like a phenomenon. It's not as though Andy Reid sitting there in meeting rooms with his team and saying, oh, we're going to jump out to a big lead and just cruise. In the same way that last postseason, oh, we're going to fall behind by double digits each game and then turn it on.
You look at the Week 12 game, the first time that these two teams played each other, and Kansas City gave up 14 points to Tampa Bay in the fourth quarter, and they're not suddenly playing prevent defense. They're mixing man with zone. They're still blitzing. Like, they were absolutely still trying in the fourth quarter when they gave up those 14 points to Tampa Bay. Like, it's not like their defense stopped trying. So that's a little bit of an argument against the flip the switch theory. That's an argument in favor of Kansas City just has happened to have two good games in the playoffs, but they're not really that much better than Tampa Bay. And this game is really a 50-50 shot.
Aaron Schatz is here. He's usually there. We're usually there. We're usually all there. And then we're not there this time, certainly in Tampa for Super Bowl 55. Hopefully Los Angeles next year. Oh. Hopefully palm trees are involved and, you know, some sushi. I don't know.
Give me whatever that vaccination, we're gonna do in LA. Baby. Want to go to L.A.?
Yeah, we just want to get right? I mean, and getting through this game, and then we start to look at next year and the offseason and needs of the Ravens and – I guess this is where we can divorce the Brady Mahomes thing and say, good football game. I think the Chiefs are going to win. The Ravens and where they are and what they do, in your deepest dive on them, they're probably for you one of the more interesting things to study because it's a completely different bird than most of the other birds, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting also being in New England because New England tried to be that bird this year and failed. They basically tried to run the offense like the Ravens did, right? The idea of, you know, analytics has always said passing is more efficient than rushing. But if you can run well enough, and especially if your quarterback is part of that running game and you've got the misdirection plays and all that, you can really base your offense around the run. And they tried that here and it didn't really work. But Baltimore, that makes Baltimore, between that and the fact that they're very analytics friendly and they go for it on fourth down a lot, makes Baltimore a really interesting team to study.
What do you think is the next step for them? I mean, in 2019, they had one of the all-time great DVOA regular seasons. I mean, they had the highest point differential, I believe, since the 2007 Patriots. So, you know, I think there was some inevitability that they were going to have some statistical regression this year, just based on just how incredibly efficient they were. But, you know, in your mind, you know, because so many people have talked about this, you know, the need to pass better, yada, yada, yada. But in your mind, are they on the right track still? I mean, is it something that as Ravens fans to not, you know, start to down? I mean, as you mentioned, everything we know about analytics today say the pass. But, you know, this is a team that's still won, 26 games total over the last 2 years.
I think going into next year in the AFC, you think to yourself, Kansas City is just ahead of everybody else, in part because Mahomes is ahead of everybody else, right, in part because the Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey triad is so difficult to defend. Okay, but who else is in it in the AFC? Right? If Kansas City falters, if Mahomes gets hurt, who else is in it? Who's going to challenge them? You absolutely have to put Baltimore in that group, sure, given how Baltimore has played the last 2 years. Are there places where they need to improve? Absolutely. Is the passing game the biggest one? Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to make any arguments that I think aren't being made by a bunch of Ravens fans calling into talk shows. The biggest thing this team could use is a number one wide receiver. It really feels like the wide receivers that they've taken in the draft in recent years have just not developed the way you would want. Marquise Brown didn't become the weapon that you wanted him to be. Miles Boykin didn't quite become what you wanted him to be. But the best thing would be a real number one receiver who would knock everybody down a peg in their responsibilities and free things up for, you know, it makes it tough. You can't double Marquise Brown deep because you have to double this other guy who's new to the team. And the name I'm going to bring up, who's going to be a free agent, has probably been brought up a ton of times in Baltimore, and that's Allen Robinson from the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I keep coming back to, they've rushed for over 6,000 yards the last 2 years. You look at the yards per carry, what Lamar Jackson's done. I mean, J.K. Dobbins led all NFL running backs in yards per carry this year. I just don't know how much better you can get running the football than what they've done the last 2 years. So if you can improve any more there, which I think it's fair to make that argument that it's going to be really difficult to be even better than they've been there, that improvement has to come from somewhere else. And, you know, maybe they don't need to run for 3,100 yards. Maybe it's 2,700, which is still incredible, and you find more efficiency in the passing game. I mean, I think that has to be the logical next step for them. You know, not to get too narrative heavy, but in terms of getting to the playoffs where you're playing better teams, not that it's something that is some drastic football game. It's just you're going to go up against great passing games who can score points like Kansas City and Buffalo, even though Buffalo didn't exactly do a great job offensively against them in the divisional round.
Yeah, and I think you need to be able to, if the run game is blocked, you need to be able to switch to the pass, and you just need to be a better passing team. They were an average passing team this year.
Right.
Aaron Schatz is here. Tell everybody about what you're doing these days. And I guess virtually we're locked down. People that want to be up on the draft, up on the season, up on their team, up on their offense, know more about the Ravens or any other team for that matter. This is what you do, Pro Football Outsiders.
Yeah, footballoutsiders.com. Again, there'll be lots of Super Bowl preview stuff up right now. We're also having a big sale on our FO Plus premium product, which is weekly fantasy projections, preseason fantasy projections, picks against the spread, big database of DVOA that goes all the way back to 1985. And that's 55% off through the Super Bowl if people want to check that out. We'll have all of our content, and then we get into our off-season content, looking through the divisions, where the biggest holes are, where the free agents are, covering free agency, projection systems for draft. You know, we're not a hardcore draft site. We don't get as into it as a lot of these other sites with the draft. But, you know, we do our off-season stuff, and then we start writing our book. And there will be a Football Outsiders Almanac 2021 that comes out in July, previewing next season. And we start the whole dance over again.
You know, I got the screen up on this. Talk about your people, because, you know, I've had a lot of people on my staff. There was a time that WNST was here before Luke, believe it or not. I like it better this way, but over all the years, I've had a lot of different staffers, different people that have gone on to do different things. You know, your place has been really a think tank. I mean, as much as you're out in front of it, there are a lot of cool people that are involved in doing this with you, yeah?
Yeah, well, I have this coaching tree, kind of like Bill Parcells or Andy Reid, all these guys who've worked under me, who've gone on elsewhere, whether it's Bill Barnwell with ESPN or Michael David Smith with Pro Football Talk or Doug Farrar, who's with USA Today now. But we have a lot of, I think, really good writers, whether it's Scott Spratt, who's our fantasy expert, or Rivers McCown, who has a pretty unique sense of humor. Mike Tanier also has a pretty unique sense of humor.
One of my favorite people, Tanier. Love
Ben Muth, who used to be a Pac-12, all Pac-12 offensive lineman and does offensive line breakdowns. Derek Klassen, who does our film room stuff. Our college guys, Brian Fremo, Parker Fleming, and Ian Boyd. We've just got a good group of guys that that cover the league and that cover college football too. I mean, college football is not my thing. I come from the land where if it wasn't Doug Flutie, nobody cares.
I've had breakfast with you in Indianapolis on some very dark mornings, Aaron Schatz.
Yeah, I'm not – college football is not my thing, but we have people who cover it and cover it well. So we like to do everything football related, and I've got a good group of guys doing it.
We'll always have grape nuts at the courtyard together, yes. I think, back in the day. Luke, are you done with Professor Schatz?
I feel like next year in Jerusalem, except now it's like next year in Indianapolis.
I hope so.
Aaron, last thing for you. I think for you, as someone who's looked at football analytics for a long time, how gratifying is it to see we're slowly but surely becoming smarter in terms, not just fans and media, but we're seeing coaches, although maybe conference championship weekend wasn't the best example of that, but we're seeing more aggressive play. We're seeing more aggressive decision. And not when I even say aggressive, that implies that, maybe you're being reckless.
It's smart.
We're seeing coaches make smarter decisions. And I think here in Baltimore with John Harbaugh, one of the earlier ones to do that here over the last, 5 years, but you're seeing it become more and more the norm and less of these Mike Vrabel punting from the opponent's 40-yard line in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see the way that it's spread, especially the last 2 or 3 years. And I really have the Philadelphia Eagles to thank. Mm-hmm. It's a copycat league, and every time some team wins the Super Bowl, somebody tries to copy them, whether it's everybody running Tampa 2 after Tampa won it in 2002, or everybody basically signing anybody who's ever even been in the building for the Patriots to run their teams. And one of the things that happened is after the Eagles were really aggressive on fourth downs, teams looked at it and realized what the numbers said and have gotten a lot better about it. And it's really gratifying to see. Now, the next step is, listen, I've always said since I started Football Outsiders in 2003, and it's amazing that I've been doing this for 18 years, I always said that my personal goal was never to change the way football teams were run. It was to change the way football teams were covered. I am a media guy, first and foremost, right? I'm an ex-radio disc jockey. So,
what kind of tunes you play, man? I didn't know that.
I was on Alternative, Daytona Beach's New Rock Alternative, 93.1 The Crow.
And what years were these?
I was at WBRU Providence from 92 to 96, then briefly at WFNX in Boston, and then WKRO in Daytona through 97.
Oh, dude, you and I could talk indie rock like all night, right?
Totally. I remember things like walking through the offices with the Chumbawamba single, the tub thumping, going, would everybody like to hear the next number one hit? Because this is it. Like, this is going to be, you are not going to be able to escape this song.
So you were like HFS era, mid-90s.
Yeah. Working for an HFS-like station. I was a music
critic. Okay, so I was a music critic in the late 80s. So like my college rock would be more like REM. U2 was a college band, but a little, on the edge of my time. You were like almost a generation.
No, I was when this all broke. I was in the radio business when Nirvana broke a year before I got into things. So I was in the radio business when like Green Day broke and Weezer broke and all these bands
Linkin Park,
actually became
all that. Gotcha.
A big thing. Linkin Park was near the end of my time. Korn, Limp Bizkit, that whole rap rock genre was near the end of my time. One of my claims to fame is that I'm one of the people who helped discover Creed.
With arms wide open.
Wow.
We played them as an unsigned band. We played their demo.
Nice. I'm sneezing. The woman
Creed
who
does that to me too.
I know. The woman who allegedly discovered Rush showed up on my Twitter timeline a couple days ago, and I thought, man, that's an interesting. I want to have her on the show. You know what I mean? Like, I want to
talk to her. That's an interesting story. Yeah, I'm sure that's an interesting story. The So I'm an old media guy. So I think the next step is we've done really good getting people who understand analytics into the national media. A lot of national media reporters understand it now. You know, The Athletic has a guy who has guys who do analytics. Mm-hmm. ESPN has people who do analytics, including me. They have Mina Kimes on NFL Live. What we don't have is the color commentators.
Right.
The national color commentators, other than Collinsworth, really, don't understand how analytics work at all. And that's the next step, is we've got to get those guys to understand it so that when a team goes for it on fourth downs, they don't just throw up their hands and go, well, you know, analytics. Like, they can actually explain, like, for example, the theory behind why you go for two when you're down eight instead of kicking an extra point, you go for two right then. They could explain that whole theory.
You know what they need? They need you to be like the official. They need.
Yes.
We don't understand.
Mike Pereira.
We don't understand what the hell just happened because we didn't play the game that way. Let's go to the booth.
You know, and then you can explain it like that.
Yes.
Right?
They need an analytics version of Mike Pereira or Dean Blandino. Every network should have one. I fully volunteer to be one of them. You know, ESPN could get Brian Brooke to do it.
I hope you're well compensated if you are.
I would love to do it. I would love to be there explaining analytics to people every Sunday.
So would Luke. I mean, Luke would love for you to be there, right? Luke, this is a beef you have with baseball, right? Like, and
oh, I call this the punts and bunts crowd for baseball and football. I mean, there's so much risk aversion, and, you know, coaches think they're playing it safe, and they're actually harming their chances of winning a football game. And I think one thing, and Aaron, to piggyback off of what you said about TV broadcast, I feel so many times we equate keeping a tie or overtime in order with maximizing my opportunity to win a football game.
Oh, he hates that one. Aaron, he hates that
one. The goal is not to go to overtime.
Yeah.
The goal is to win.
It really is. And the Ravens, their early season loss in 2019 against Kansas City, I mean, people were up in arms. That was a game John Harbaugh was going for two. And
so what you're saying, it's not blackjack rules. Blackjack, I push, I'm okay, right? I'm safe.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, if you stay on 12 in blackjack every single time, you're probably not going to,
work out. Going to overtime is better than losing.
Sure,
But winning is better than going to overtime.
Right. I mean, and in this day and age, especially these games where you're going up against Kansas City and the Ravens, quite frankly, the last couple of years, these teams that come in and think they're going to play it safe and risk aversion and punt, and you're not giving yourself a chance. You can't be afraid to lose the game by three touchdowns because, well, losing by 10 points looks better in the end.
Drove me nuts about Buffalo last week. McDermott was one of the best coaches in the league during the regular season, and he just lost his nerve against Kansas City. And you're not going to beat Kansas City with field goals. You've got to score touchdowns.
As I tweeted at one point, I guess it was in the third quarter, he's keeping that two-touchdown defeat in order with the decision-making that he's made.
And Arians is very conservative. So watch for this in the
Runs
Super
on first
Bowl.
Down, yep.
He's very conservative on fourth down, too. Like, he's got a good team. They are really good at running in short yardage. He should be going for it on fourth and one and fourth and two, like, every time. Keep the ball away from Mahomes. Keep the ball with Brady. Will he do it? I doubt it.
Well, he's only got the greatest quarterback that's ever lived, and here we are talking about Tom Brady again. This is a really – back to the beginning. It's going to be a good football game. Aaron, we want everybody to go out and subscribe and play along and follow you out on Twitter and social media and ESPN and anywhere else. I have a feeling 5 years from now you'll be in the booth and I'll be like, That's my dude. That's him.
If they want me, I am here.
He's nerding it up with us. Hey, man, we appreciate you.
Thanks,
and next
Aaron.
Year, man, two beers, okay? Two beers.
Yes. See you in Los Angeles, guys.
Appreciate you. Aaron Schatz,
take
Football
care.
Outsiders. Go find him. Of course, Luke Jones. You can find him at Baltimore Luke and everywhere we are. We talked to Matt Burke together. We talked to Bianca Belair. Right, Luke? You want to plug that one a little bit?
The EST of WWE. Absolutely.
I know you like that one. So we've had a pretty cool virtual week. Hanging out, mess at BaltimorePositive.com finds me, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, everywhere we are, you are, WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.